I'd often talk about the 4 R's: the right product, at the right rate, at the right time, and in the right place. And I suppose, you know, them basics will go a long way in reducing nitrate leach. And so just making sure that, you know, you're applying your nitrogen there, especially in the springtime when we have a minimum 6 degrees in the soil and in increasing. And I suppose look at the back end of the year then, you know, that you're making sure that you're not going too late with a heavy application of nitrogen, which is going to increase that surplus that I previously alluded to.
It's great to be back with another Environment Edge podcast, and you're very welcome to the show on a St. Patrick's Bank holiday. Nitrate leaching is a very hot topic in the water quality at the moment here, John. Farmers are looking for ways to reduce losses from the farm. So who do we have lined up for today?
For sure, Cathal. St. Paddy's Day is normally when we say growth really starts to kick off, and farmers are looking to make sure enough nitrogen is spread to meet crop demands. Cheerlawn advisor Matthew Moylan joins us to give us some tips on how to minimise nitrogen leaching on farms.
I'm Cathal Summers.
And I'm Deirdre Glenn.
Your Chagas Sustainability Advisors. And you're welcome for another Environment Edge podcast number 75. And here we go.
Matthew, you're very welcome to the show. I suppose everybody at the moment has nitrogen and nitrates on their mind. Can you tell us a little bit about what water quality is looking like nationally?
Thanks for having me, Deirdre. I suppose, look, when we're looking at water quality, I suppose looking the last midterm review of the derogation, we see there on the back of water quality, you know, there was a cut to the derogation maximum allowance. So I suppose it's a really, really important aspect from an agricultural perspective that we get water quality turned in the right direction. So I suppose from a water quality point of view, some of the main pressures and the biggest pressure, I suppose, is from nutrients, with nitrate and phosphorus being the two biggest nutrients impacting water quality. And I suppose, look, if we just get a picture of Ireland in our heads and draw a line from Dublin down to Limerick and southeast of that line, you know, we're kind of looking at a nitrogen or nitrate problem in our waters. And northwest of that is mainly phosphorus and sediment. So I suppose predominantly in the southeast, you know, why the problem is a nitrate issue is, I suppose, from the free drain and type soils. And nitrate is a leaky type of nutrient that's mobile in the soil. It's very water soluble. And I suppose we're getting vertical movement of this nitrate when there's water moving through the soil. So I suppose when we're talking about nitrate leaching, we have to have two elements. We have to have nitrate or a surplus nitrate in the soil, and we also must have water percolating through the soil profile. So I suppose that's why we're getting most of our nitrate leaching in the winter months.
So at the moment, we're sitting at around 50% water quality good and 50% water quality a poor status. And the Water Framework Directors wants us to get to good status by 2027. And the three of us, Cathal, yourself and I, are working on the ASAP programme. So we're working with farmers in different catchments. And indeed, Mary Roach was on last week and she's working with us. But her main pressure in the west of Ireland will be, say, phosphorus. And down here now in the southeast, we're in Kilkenny and Wexford and Carlow, it's nitrate. So what kind of different practices have been introduced to reduce nitrogen and nitrate usage on farms?
Yeah, so here, I suppose from the farmer's perspective, you know, there's certain actions that can be taken, and I suppose the basic actions are going to reap the most results. So the likes of, I suppose I'd often talk about the 4 R's. I suppose we here on this call have heard a lot about the 4 R's: the right product, at the right rate, at the right time, and in the right place. And I suppose, you know, them basics will go a long way in reducing nitrate leaching. So just making sure that, you know, you're applying your nitrogen there, especially in the springtime when we have a minimum 6 degrees in the soil and in increasing. And I suppose look at the back end of the year then, you know, that you're making sure that you're not going too late with a heavy application of nitrogen, which is going to increase that surplus that I previously alluded to. I suppose the right product in the right place then is, you know, making sure that you have your soil results. So I suppose that's a big one, soil fertility, and making sure you have soil samples. So getting a soil sample taken across the whole farm and applying your P's and K's in relation to where they should be on the back of your soil results.
So farmers have seen a 10% reduction in chemical nitrogen. They've also seen a reduction in the amount of organic nitrogen that can be produced on the farm. They've seen soil water regulations change. And, you know, there's been an awful lot of regulations around managing nutrients and managing nitrogen. What's the atmosphere like when you go out and you have a chat with a farmer once you get a referral?
Yeah, so Deirdre, I think in general, you know, we get a very positive result, as we know from through the ASAP program. I suppose it's just trying to get that information. I suppose, you know, we have all the research and science behind it, and I suppose it's getting that across to the farmers and explaining that. And I suppose, you know, even we're talking about, you know, soil nutrients, and I suppose it's even at a farm scale, and I suppose it's even within the farm where we need to get the nutrients spread across into the right places on these farms. And I suppose one thing is, I know we're talking about nitrate here and nitrate leaching, and I suppose, look, we shouldn't just talk about nitrate in isolation. You know, we need to get all the elements. You know, we need to get our pH, our PK, and I suppose sulfur is probably one that's often forgotten about. We need to get all these elements right to get good fertility and, you know, get good response from our applied nitrogen and nutrients. Like, as well as I often say, it's like the hurling team. We need everybody pulling together to win the All-Ireland.
It's very true.
Yeah, Matthew, I suppose we'd often go out on the ground. You're chatting to farmers every day about this kind of problem. And like Deirdre just said, the big problem seems to be down, you know, all the way from Dublin, all the way down to South East, all the way down to South Cork. Like, when you go onto a farm and a farmer doesn't have a river nearby, can they cause a problem? No rivers.
I'd often get that question asked when even on the initial phone call, I might say, look, I'm going to have a call out to you there and have a chat about nitrogen. And, you know, he'd often say, maybe, or she'd say that, you know, I don't have any connectivity to a river. I've no streams, rivers. And I suppose a lot of these farms where there's no drains, streams, rivers on the farm, these are the farms that can be potentially a problem from a nitrate leaching point of view, which are typically the predominant free draining soils in the country. So I suppose just one little phrase, I suppose, is, you look, you don't need connectivity to be a problem from a nitrate point of view. So I suppose in my first comment there, I mentioned about nitrate moving vertically through the soil, and I suppose that's where we're getting the problems, Cathal, on this dry free draining soil. The nitrate is moving down, which we can't see, I suppose, and oftentimes it can be hard to grasp when, you know, we can't see it. Like, I suppose if it was a phosphorus issue flowing to a river, you know, we can probably see the problem maybe in high rainfall, but from a nitrogen point of view, you know, when it's traveling vertically down through the soil, we can't see what's happening, and oftentimes it can be hard to grasp.
Do you use the PIP maps much on your visits? How do you find that they, you know, I think a lot of the farmers nationally work very visually, don't they? They love maps and interactions with maps. So when they look at these pollution impact potential maps that were produced by the EPA, and we can bring them out on farms and have a chat around them, it kind of brings home the different types of soil types on farms, your wet soils and your dry soils. It also brings into sort of focus the vulnerability to nitrates and phosphorus losses on farms. So how do you find them, and how do the farmers engage with those maps?
Yeah, so oftentimes here, you know, we can talk about nitrogen issues on a farm or phosphorus issues maybe on certain farms, but I suppose it's not until we can actually, you know, maybe see it on a map, and when I present it out to the farmer, maybe when we're on a farm visit, you know, showing that, you know, certain areas of the farm are more vulnerable than others, especially from a nitrate point of view.
But isn't the big thing, I suppose, like, so we can go out and identify where the issues might occur. And like you mentioned a few times, the most free-drained soils in the country are the ones that are the most dangerous for nitrate loss. But on the counter to that, because they're so free-draining, we can get out the earliest with our animals. We can stay out the longest with our animals. We can get slurry and fertilizer out quicker because the ground allows us. So it kind of goes back down to management, doesn't it? Just because we can get out at a certain time and we're not marking the ground doesn't mean it's the right time. It's one of your R's, I think you mentioned.
Yeah, no, exactly, Cathal. And I suppose, look, one thing I suppose there's a lot of talk about as well is, you know, slurry storage. And I suppose I'm talking about here now having a buffer on top of your regulation to get you out into a time, you know, when the grass is growing, when you're going to get the most value out of your applied nutrients. And the same at the back end of the year, Cathal, you know, applying your fertilizer as early in the season, I suppose, at the back end of the year as possible to reduce that surplus.
Yeah, and another thing, I'm sure you're probably talking about farmers as well. So when there's no real good nitrate test out there that a farmer can test the nitrate in the soil, because the nitrogen changes so quickly in soil, there's no point testing, because in a week's time, there's different pools of it. But I suppose one of the main things that I would talk to farmers about is grass growth. So we know, first of all, you'd want to identify how much grass you're growing on your farm. Now, one farmer could be growing 8 tons, another could be growing 16 tons. But so we know if they're growing a certain amount of grass, that requires a certain amount of nitrogen. You can kind of work it out that way, I suppose.
Yeah, no, exactly, Carl. And I suppose it's coming back, as I said there, you know, it's about, you know, getting our basics right and knowing where we are. So I suppose, look, when a farmer knows what grass he's growing, then he'll know how much nitrogen is required to grow that crop. I suppose oftentimes another one is forgotten about maybe is the soil nitrogen and what's happening in the soil itself and what the soil is releasing, especially from mineralization. You know, we can grow maybe 4 or 5 tons of grass from the soil nitrogen. So I suppose, yeah, from that point of view, Carl, I suppose it's all coming back to, you know, again, probably having your soil fertility bright, getting good grass growth, trying to take up as much nitrogen as possible that supplies. And I suppose, look, there's a lot of talk at the moment about a potential further dropping in chemical nitrogen limits. So I suppose we're going to have to try and get as much bang for our buck from every grain of fertilizer that's applied.
So I suppose it's really all about, you know, nitrogen utilization. And we did a very good podcast before on nitrogen utilization. You and I work together. We work within Dairy Sustainability Ireland, which is fantastic. So, you know, cooperation and networking and all of that. So recently, you know, as part of our teamwork, we got a referral in a catchment, in a local catchment here. And it was really to do with the application of slurry at the wrong time of the year. Now, these farmers had sufficient storage. They were applying to the rules because they were applying in March, but there was a deluge of rain afterwards. So that feeds back into, you know, the right time and being very aware of weather constraints and weather conditions. So some of the nutrient then made its way because it was connected to a water body into it. So we got a chance to work together based on referrals, go out to farms, have a conversation, you know, on the, you know, it was a critical source area, talk about, you know, nutrient management. And it was a very, very good experience, wasn't it, with the farmers, because, you know, it created a bigger awareness of, you know, you might have your capacity, you might have your storage, you might be adhering to the rules, but at the same time, if we go out at the wrong time at all, it can have an impact.
No, exactly, Deirdre. And I suppose, you know, coming back to maybe the 4 hours again, and even having that buffer of slurry storage can be a big one. And, you know, it's you know, this storage is expensive. But look, I suppose in the current climate, we're going to need storage going forward. And look, I suppose, you know, it's getting the basics right again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in fairness to farmers, like if you're talking in March and if all conditions are right and it spreads slurry, you know, you couldn't fault them for doing that, because you're coming into the height of the growing season there, and that's probably the safer time for nitrate. But I suppose where I'd like to get a message out to farmers is that slurry in the back end, you know, August, September, or that 30 units that is spread maybe in September, you know, that's, you mentioned, Matthew, you have a build-up of nitrate over the year. You have a big bank of it sitting in the soil there in September, and if we put more nitrogen on top of it, and you mentioned also as well in the wintertime, that's where we get the big losses. So that's the one, the back end is the real dangerous part for nitrogen, isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly, Cathal. I suppose, you know, we're talking about, you know, this surplus is the big one, and trying to reduce that as much as possible. And I said, like, you know, trying to get as much value, as much out of that slurry. So I suppose, look, if you could have as much slurry, you know, spread, you know, I suppose in up to the middle of the year, you know, targeted mainly on silage ground, I suppose, is a big one. And then you're getting your P's and K's maybe where, you know, that ground is probably hungrier from that point of view as well.
Can you tell us a little bit, Matthew, about what Tierlan is doing in terms of sustainability payments? I suppose just to do with nitrogen at the moment.
Yeah, so I suppose here in Tierlan, we've a dedicated team of sustainability advisors working hand in glove with our suppliers and putting in place water quality remediation plans as part of the ASSA programme. And we work closely with yourself and Cathal here. And as part of our Live and Proof sustainability strategy, we have a sustainability action payment. And I suppose the sustainability action payment is a half a cent a litre payment to farmers that are taking certain sustainability actions on their farms. So I suppose it's a three year programme, which has been really, really successful up this far. So I suppose on average, it's worth about €3,000 to the average supplier. And I suppose as part of this programme, suppliers are getting rewarded for taking actions, I suppose, from a water quality point of view, the likes of having a nutrient management plan, fencing off their water courses, having an ASAP water quality remediation plan in place. And I suppose another one that we've added to this year is taking part in the new water EIP. I suppose this, the sustainability action payment, the measures are closely aligned with the marginal abatement cost curve, the Chagas marginal abatement cost curve. So I suppose moving on from the sustainability action payment, we're currently standing up a new project where we'll be working closely with Chagas and LawPro and other enabling partners to stand beside and support our family farm suppliers in some pilot areas throughout the Slaney catchment.
That sounds like a very exciting initiative and challenging initiative as well.
Yeah, the important thing is, I suppose, take from this that you know, water quality is a massive issue, and we know that, and the farmers need support, and Chagas and the private planners are supporting, but now the industry is getting on board and putting their money where their mouth is to promote sustainable practices and improve water quality. So that's vitally important that we all work together on that. Matthew, I just want to ask you a question about we've kind of covered the right time, the right place and the right rate, but we haven't really gone on the right product that you mentioned earlier on. Sulfur. What do you think sulfur's role maybe? Is it a good role in reducing nitrate losses?
No, it definitely is, Cathal. And I suppose I would have said there, it's often the one that's forgotten about. So I suppose in days gone by, we wouldn't have needed it. We probably had more sulfur falling out of the sky. So I suppose now it's really closely linked to, you know, the nitrogen uptake and efficiency within the soil. So I suppose, you know, farmers want to be, I suppose, from, you know, maybe April to June, you know, looking at kind of a little and often approach when they're applying their fertilizers. 15, 16 units on the grazing ground for the year, looking at around 15 units of sulfur in cut of silage and first cut silage, and maybe 10 units for second cut silage. So I think it's a really important one. And, you know, farmers on the ground have said to me that you know, where their pH, P and K is right, and they weren't seeing massive responses to fertilizer, you know, an addition of a small amount of sulfur was making a big difference to them, and they've seen it in the grass growth and when they were grass measuring.
Yeah, and the papers are all come back to say that it's definitely reducing leaching by up to 20% nitrate leaching. So that's definitely a weapon for farmers to use. The other thing, you mentioned fertility as regards lime and P's and K's, but on the nutrient management conference there on Monday, I think was it, there. And Mark Plunkett and David Wall and a few of these guys are warning us that when price fertilizer got expensive, some farmers took pea breaks. And we have to be careful that we don't, especially farmers growing a lot of grass, I suppose, going back to what your point is, if we don't maintain that index trees for the people that are growing a decent amount of grass, that can be a problem on nitrate uptake and efficiency, can't it?
Yeah, no, like I alluded to earlier, Cathal, we need everyone pulling together, I suppose. And we need, you know, first of all, we need to fix the lime. Her pH, you know, get her pH up to 6.3 to 6.5, I suppose, from a solely grass point of view. And I suppose if you're looking at including clover or multi-species into the mix as well, you're looking at maybe up to a 6.8, you know, especially if you're only taking samples every 4 years. The P then, I suppose, is another important one to apply on the back of your soil samples. And I suppose look, the potassium there is really required for optimum growth. You know, it's strongly linked to how efficiently the nitrogen applied is taken up and used by the grass wards. And I suppose it'll also help in periods, you know, of drought or where the grass is becoming stressed maybe during the summer period.
I think we've all seen, the three of us have all seen as well, when we're out walking farms, that the uptake with clover is very significant in the last 3 or 4 years, isn't it, on farms?
Derogation probably played a line in that too, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it's partly down to regulation, but also to the awareness that nitrogen is expensive. They're trying to do the right thing. NUE, nitrogen use efficiency.
No, I think, Deirdre, there has been a good uptake in clover, and look, I suppose even multi-species. I know there's probably more research to be done on that element, but on the clover, I think our farmers have used it and have found massive benefits in reducing their chemical nitrogen. You know, look, we're also getting credit from an emissions point of view there, and you know, farmers have seen it does work. And I'm under no illusion that it's not an easy plan to manage. There's a lot of management around it, but you know, it does reap the benefits and rewards when it's done right.
And funny you should mention clover, because this is going out on the 18th of March, which is the day after St. Patrick's Day. But Matthew, you're after hitting the nail on the head there. There's a bit of management around clover, and we know that a little bit. It's very, very manageable, and most farmers tell you about. But we have to do it. We've no choice but to get these things right. We have to reduce our chemical, and clover is one of the key fixes, and multi-species wards as well. On some of my farms, I'm talking about guys in excess of 300-400 cows are 40% of farms and multi-species, and they have clover in every paddock. And look, we have to look for every loophole, like you said, to try and go at that. And I think I'm hoping you're seeing that on the ground as well. You're hitting a lot of dairy farms in Southeast.
Yeah, and sure, like we spoke previously there just about the reductions in the chemical fertilizer. So we're gonna need clover to try and replace some of these cuts that we're seeing to the maximum limits for chemical application. And as I said, look, guys are really getting on well with it, where they have it done to the letter of the law.
Getting back to the water CIP, I think we have a great opportunity, haven't we, you know, with all this money, 60 million, 50 million available to farmers within the catchment areas and outside of the catchment areas as well. What kind of mitigation actions are we going to be able to put into place, you know, for these farmers? What additional payments will we be able to give them? Like, you've got your sustainability payment from Tierlan, but this is an additional payment. So, you know, we're putting the money behind these strategies.
Yeah, so here, I suppose, from a nitrogen point of view, I suppose there's a nitrogen use efficiency plan to be drawn up. That can be drawn up for the farmers, where they'll get paid to do that.
It's great incentive to get the soil sampling done as well.
Yes, no, exactly. Yeah, and I suppose the measures from the water quality EIP are measures that are over and above regulation, and it's great to see, you know, that we have a pot of money there now that we can put towards helping farmers implement some of these measures.
Yeah,
and you know what's really important, sometimes forgotten all this. So we have the IP coming, so we have money to give our farmers in our areas. And you mentioned that the nutrient use efficiency plan that you'd be able to do that will actively target nitrate loss. But what we forget sometimes is, and I'm going to blow our own trumpet a little bit now, is if you take the service of an asset advisor, be it Deirdre or Matthew or some of your colleagues, Matthew, on the dairy in Tierlan or across the whole country, as part of asset, we have advisors, Chagas and co-op advisors across the country. Not alone will you get to do that and you might get a payment, but you're going to get an invaluable service of an advisor that will walk out to your farm and actively sit down with you and drop a plan that will help you reduce nutrient and sediment losses and nitrogen on your farm. And if we do that across the country, then we can solve the water quality issues. And in turn, what that will lead to is less regulation, less headaches about worrying about derogation going. And even if you're in derogation or not in derogation, if derogation went in the morning, which we hope it doesn't, because there's 7,000 or 8,000 plus farmers looking, relying on it. If water quality can get right and we can have derogation at the same time, that's what we're aiming for. That's fine, as long as water is correct. But even if derogation went in the morning, other regulation would be in place to solve water quality problems in the morning. Until the day that we have clean water across the country, there'll always be heavy regulation to enforce that. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, no, exactly, Carl. And I suppose when you're talking about derogation, I suppose we all have to put our shoulders to the wheel here now. Advisors, farmers, industry, everybody across the board. We've only 22 months left before the next derogation. So I think, as I said, everybody needs to work in co with each other and do as much as we can possibly do in the next 22 months.
So if you had one final point to make to farmers, piece of advice, I suppose you have a lot of dairy farmers and beef farmers and tillage farmers here, and we probably didn't say too much about tillage here at the moment, but I know you're doing a bit of work there as well, up in the Slaney on tillage as well as grassland.
Yeah, so Carl, I suppose, look, it's all coming back to, as I said previously, you know, about getting the basics right, back to soil fertility. I know we're on about with 30, 40 years now, but it's as I said, you know, it's going to reap the biggest rewards, getting back to basics, getting your basics right and working from there. Like, I suppose, look, we were talking about the NUE, I suppose, a relatively new figure. It is a good figure to have, I suppose, as a base, as a start to work on other measures from a nitrogen use efficiency point of view as well.
And contact your ASAP advisor.
I think that's the big thing, isn't it? Just pick up the phone, be an ASAP advisor, private planner, Chagas advisor, whatever you may have, pick up the phone, ask for the advice. Because if you push it out till next month or next year, it's too late. We have to be working on it straight away. Yeah. So Matthew, thanks a million for your time. Really enjoyed the chat. To tell you the truth, we probably could have spent another hour with you. We only touched on the tip of the iceberg, but look, I hope farmers have got a bit of direction, and certainly I think you gave some great advice there along the way there today. Thanks a million for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Matthew.
Thanks, Carl, and thanks, Deirdre.
So there you have it. Tune in next time to hear more interesting chats and discussions.
Myself and Deirdre will be back in 2 weeks' time, but do give us a review on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to the Environment Edge podcast.